Welcome to Purple Politics Nevada. I'm your host, Lucia Starbuck. The name refers to the fact that the state isn't red or blue, it's both. We're broadcasting live from KUNR Studio in Reno. Today, we're talking about the rising costs of health insurance. Starting this year, federal subsidies for insurance under the Affordable Care Act expired, causing monthly premiums to spike for Nevadans enrolled in the state's insurance marketplace, Nevada Health Link. If you'll remember, that was a big debate during the federal government shutdown this fall, when Democrats were holding the line but ultimately gave in to reinstate SNAP and pay federal employees. Most recent renewal efforts have also stalled. And it's not just that. State employees are potentially facing a steep increase, and small businesses are feeling the brunt of it too. To learn what that looks like, I'm now joined by Luke Pascals, the small business owner of Aqueous Plumbing. Thank you so much for joining me, Luke.
Thank you.
So through the Northern Nevada Builders Association, your hometown health association plan for your business went up by 18%. What does that look like for your monthly costs?
So it's a huge spike for monthly costs. We absorb as ownership the full amount of that health share, health insurance increase. So 18% across everybody is huge.
How much was that?
So it's about $2 to $3 an hour per employee that goes up. So it's a lot. And since we absorb it all and don't really share that with the employees, we're taking the brunt of it. However, we cover our employees, but not their families, so they can pay for them. So they're having a big, huge pinch on it. So what it looks like for us is we don't just absorb it. We pass our increases along to our customers. So now across the board, everybody who does work for us, or we do work for, get that associated price increase.
So if your health insurance bill isn't going up, maybe your plumbing repair bill will.
Yes, exactly. So it's, and we've had this conversation with a number of our customers, like, wow, you know, your prices have gone up. We're like, yeah, our costs have gone up. And it's across the board. Yeah.
If you can give a number, just how much did it go up in 1 month?
My wife handles all that stuff, so it's more of a percentage that goes up. But I'd say we're on the order of $10,000 to $15,000 a month.
Wow.
Most likely, right in that neighborhood.
And you don't have 50 employees, so you're not required to offer health insurance to your staff. Why did you choose to?
Well, I think it's the right thing to do. I need my employees to be healthy. And we're in construction. And in construction, we've seen companies that don't offer them. And we've seen guys with serious health maladies. And insurance is expensive. And they're just trying to make ends meet, and they won't go and get taken care of. And you just watch somebody physically falling apart. So I want my guys to be taken care of. It's also an added benefit, so I can get more quality employees versus just somebody who's available. So we offer it. I feel kind of a moral obligation for it. And since it's such a large expense, I'm able to easier pay for it by putting it into jobs, where it would be much harder for them pulling out on a tight paycheck just to cover it.
Do the increasing costs make you ever reevaluate offering that?
No, it just reevaluates what my price will be. I think I'm just come hell or high water, we're going to offer health insurance. I may not be as generous as far as helping out my employees with their families, because that's a large expense. We have some employees that have very large families, and because of the size of their families, they're able to get like Medicare or Medicaid or one of the government programs to help out with their families. So we have been wanting to try to get more of their families covered, but with the big spike, if I can't pass it on, we're not in a financial position to completely absorb entire families. But for just them, it will always stay.
And association plans don't have as strict requirements as ACA plans. They don't have to cover everything that the ACA lays out. Are you happy with the coverage under the insurance that you have?
So it's kind of an interesting thing is we have one of the better insurances that's offered, and it's still lousy. So years ago, we had insurances. I remember my insurance, I went through some major medical issues, and the deductibles were fairly easy. And now we go to premium insurances. That's the best that they offer. They're gold and they're platinum plans. And they're quite frankly lousy. I mean, the co-insurance that goes into them, the super high deductibles, the limits of coverage. And that's the good stuff. So just because we offer insurance, I'm not just offering the bare bones thing. I want to offer what I want personally to my employees. And now the prices are, you know, triple, quadruple what they used to be. And they're half and even more less coverage for what's being offered.
You say lousy. What limits does it have?
Well, so there's the deductibles, which go up, which aren't terribly bad, but they won't cover the full amount. So then it's like you have to pay 20% of the medical bill or 10% of the medical bill, or your deductible doesn't kick in until you reach a certain dollar amount. I just remember reviewing it. I don't have the exact specifics of it, but I just remember it was rough as far as the expense that went into it out of pocket for paying so much money into it. Everything should be covered. The way I remember when I was going here at UNR, my insurance, it was $100 deductible and pretty much it would cover everything. And now it's like, no, you're $500 or $1,000 deductible and we'll only pay 80% of the medical costs. And then there's just the unreasonably expensive medical bills that come along. We actually experienced a bit of it with one of my children went down to emergency room. It was an important but pretty light thing. So it was a CAT scan and a blood test. It was only there for a couple hours. So we paid our $600 and we got the bill that they sent to the insurance company, which was $31,000.
Wow.
And if I didn't have such good insurance, it would be crippling to most people.
Yeah. Insurance has been caught up in a political fight, especially this year. How did you vote in 2024? And do you feel that your elected officials are working on your behalf to keep the prices low?
I don't think any of the officials are working to keep prices low. It seems to be a battle between two mindsets, and they really don't seem to care that much about, you know, the average Joe. We have one side that wants to keep everything private and just kind of support, you know, insurance companies and the increasing medical expenses. Then you have the other side who really just wants the government to take control of it. And neither side have a very good control or a good plan as far as I'm concerned.
And final question, what are you going to be taking these issues with you to the polls in November?
Yes. I always liked my parents' idea. If somebody's been in office, vote them out, regardless of where they are. That way, at least somebody has a fresh mind and maybe they're a little closer to the public versus somebody who's been institutional, been there forever.
Thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us, Luke.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
As a noted disclosure, Aqueous is a business sponsor of KUNR. And it's not just companies feeling the heat. Last year, nearly 95,000 Nevadans received the ACA tax credits, according to KFF. This includes musician Catherine Matovich. I spoke to her earlier this month about her monthly premium under the health plan of Nevada. In January, it more than doubled, going from $458 to more than $1,000.
I suspected as much, and so I'd been calling them since October trying to figure out what it was going to be. Nobody had an answer, but I kept that insurance, and then I found out in December that it was going to increase. So I was aware of the $1,000, and I was like, well, it's going to happen. I can afford it. I just can't afford other things. I was doing well with musical gigs, and so I thought, you know, I won't go out to eat as much. I love supporting local arts. We were just about to do some more renovations. Won't contribute to the local economy. I mean, I literally was thinking that, okay, so we can have what we do, and we would be okay.
That was not the case. In December, Catherine learned she had ovarian cancer. Just 2 days before Christmas, she got two large tumors removed, and she is currently undergoing chemo, so she can't work.
And that was really completely unexpected. I'm healthy. I don't know what else to say. I've sort of made my whole life making sure that I am healthy, because if I am sick, I can't work. I happen to have a job that requires pretty much 100% attention, if not more sometimes, depending on how many people are in the group and how many people are in the audience watching us. So I was worried about being all of those things while on chemo. So I'm not playing with the Reno Phil, and I'm not playing with the Reno Chamber Orchestra, and also I'm not supposed to get sick.
With a little money Catherine can bring in over the next couple months, she started a GoFundMe to help out with all the other costs. And she's not alone. More than a third of people on the crowdfunding platform in the U.S. report financial hardship due to medical needs and need help with housing, food, or transportation while experiencing income loss, according to the American Cancer Society. One of Catherine's biggest expenses so far, her deductibles.
Because the problem happened in December of 2025, so that deductible, I had to pay out $5,200 and then rolled into January, and now I'm going up against my next deductible, so I've pretty much paid out $5,200 again. If I'd really been lucky and got cancer in February, I'm totally joking. I mean, it's so dumb. I feel like I live in Reno, I live in a casino state, and I am having casino problems with my health care, throwing the dice and hoping I got the right coverage. And my sister started a GoFundMe, which is crazy and humbling and humiliating. And I, people have just been so nice. I'm overwhelmed. What a totally up a system that we have to have GoFundMes. I'm not working at all. Between now and May, I might earn $1,000. That's it. And my husband's on Social Security, so it's kind of, you can imagine, there's not much money. Having everybody pitch in has been insanely helpful. It is paying for all the other bills I have, car insurance, eating, buying things that help me facilitate my cancer care. And I also don't know, supposedly my chemo will work and then I'll be fine. That's great. If it doesn't work, I really don't know what's going to happen next. Who has this money set aside? $10,400 just goes out the window. And then, you know, the next thing is, okay, I'll tap into my retirement, which isn't very big, you know, or I'll tap into, I have a couple of CDs. Now I won't have them. I don't have a lot of extra money. It's not like I'm rich, but at the end of this, without the GoFundMe, I think I would just be poor. I would be in debt.
Catherine has had a rocky relationship with insurance. Her husband was unable to get insured before the ACA due to a pre-existing condition. They just finished clawing their way out of tens of thousands of dollars of medical debt. And Catherine's father died without insurance, in debt as well.
I've been a big advocate for the Affordable Care Act just because my father was uninsured and I saw the type of treatment he got. I experienced it with my husband that I swore I was never going to be uninsured, and then to find myself in a situation, I feel like I am insured, but it's not enough considering if you don't work.
Thankfully, she was insured. The procedure to remove the tumors cost nearly $185,000. There's bipartisan support for the tax credits. According to KFF, a majority of Democrats and Republicans supported extending them back in October.
I am one of the people that are out there protesting all the time. And in fact, Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, I just want to say to you specifically, because we've met, I've played at gigs that you were at, I have pictures to prove it, but you really felt like you were understanding of where Nevada was at. And I was very proud of how you represented us in the Senate, and Jackie Rosen as well. And I do have some sympathy. I understand Las Vegas is a giant tourist destination, and with the government being shut down, there were problems. People couldn't land planes. People couldn't come to Las Vegas. So this entire state was losing money from that. So I get it. It was the one thing you could hold hostage. The ACA is very popular. I can't think of what the end game is, except for they would like all the sick and unhealthy people to die so that there'd be fewer people to support with Social Security. And to that end, with both our senators in Nevada, shame on you. You should have held out. And also shame on all you Republicans that don't seem to think it matters. Your constituents, they rely on that help.
Now Catherine is relying on the kindness of her community instead of the government for help.
Part of GoFundMe, I guess, is giving me a little bit of peace of mind. It's very kind. Some people, I know they don't have the money. I don't know why they're sending me money. I know who you are. Anyway, very kind.
So where do we go from here? How does this hurt health equity in the U.S.? What is the path forward for universal health care? I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you're listening to Purple Politics Nevada. Stay tuned after the short break for more. This is Lucia Starbuck, political reporter for KUNR. I'm moderating an event about immigration history, legislation, and the diverse ways immigrants contribute to our community. Please join KUNR and Sierra Nevada Forums on March 11th at 5:30 p.m. at the Brewery Arts Center in Carson City.
Now we'll return to Purple Politics Nevada with host Lucia Starbuck on KUNR Public Radio.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you're listening to Purple Politics Nevada. I'm now joined by Dr. Joseph Jarvis. He's a physician, healthcare reform advocate, and author of The Purple World, Healing the Harm in American Healthcare. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us, Joe.
Oh, thanks for having me very much.
We just heard from two Nevadans who are experiencing major spikes in their monthly insurance bills. What's the typical fallout of these price hikes?
Well, you heard it from both of them. The small business owner who really wants to provide health insurance for his workforce is increasingly unable to do that. And in his case, he's still trying, but he's recognizing that what they're getting isn't really covering their real financial security needs in if they were to face injury or illness. And then there's the person who doesn't even have a small employer to rely on. And I guess that would be common in Nevada, the gig worker, so to speak. They don't have the supplement that they need to support their purchase of health insurance from the Affordable Care Act, and they're left high and dry. Or they're underinsured, just like the people who are working with small businesses. Now, I would say, furthermore, large businesses are also leaving their workers virtually uninsured. It's just a fact. Luke identified what the fact is. It's not just the cost of the insurance, which has its own inherent administrative burden, which we can talk about as a separate major cause of high cost of healthcare in the United States, but the prices are too high too. Both of those need to be fixed.
What's the risk of people just dropping their insurance, and why is it such a red flag when you see more people becoming uninsured?
Well, they get sick anyway. And they will eventually come to the system, probably less early, therefore more sick, and therefore more expensive to treat. That's all true. And at greater risk to their own health, to their long-term stability, and risk of mortality. All of those things are true. The health system depends, if it's going to continue to be the provider of these vital services to the community, you have to have a relatively steady flow of income. And hospitals that are, for instance, a little bit less able to guarantee that revenue stream, they die on the vine. We have hospital closures going on all over the country. So it's both a risk to the individual and the health system itself.
What has made healthcare insurance so broken in this country?
The business model's entirely wrong. It's the most expensive, useless way to finance healthcare ever invented. And it's a historical anomaly that we depend on private for-profit health insurance for a majority of health financing in the United States. At the end of World War II, the various measures that were taken by Congress to tamp down inflation during the war were all removed. You know, we didn't need them anymore, but except for one. And that one was an employment-based tax policy that supported private for-profit health insurance. That didn't go away. So we ended up careening down this path that we, the only country in the world, have followed, which is to let private for-profit insurers be our principal health financing, while other nations, both our foes and our allies in World War II, all went for public financing for private, mostly private healthcare delivery, with the exception of the United Kingdom, which chose public healthcare delivery. They have a true socialized healthcare system. We developed this idea, perhaps with good intentions, because originally private health insurance was community rated, meaning everybody paid the same premium, and there were no deductibles, coinsurances, co-payments. All of those point of service, out of pocket payments didn't exist. We thought this was the better way to handle it, but it turns out it's far more efficient to just pay for it the way the way it was really envisioned initially. Everybody pays the same, or pays progressively through public revenue streams, through the tax policies, and then we have it healthcare privately delivered.
How does this hurt health equity in the U.S.?
Well, the way people get health insurance in the United States, being job related, means that those who have the better jobs, that means both the better geography, because some of those better jobs are related to where they live, and the better education, and that tends to be stratified according to people's background socioeconomic status, they get the better insurance. It tends to be true, and you heard it in the person who's a musician that you were interviewing before. Those who are sick are the ones who are less well off financially, and therefore less able to work, therefore less able to get insurance. I mean, it's a ridiculous downward spiral in people's lives. That's what happens. Health equity doesn't exist in the United States. We have no healthcare justice.
You spoke about what other countries are doing, and you founded a nonprofit to develop a statewide universal health care plan, and your hope is to put it in front of Utah voters this November. Talk about what that could look like.
We are proposing in a bill that's now live before the Utah legislature, Senate Bill 300, which we refer to as the Utah Cares Act. We propose to transform the public employees' health plan, one of the better health payers, health benefit plans in the state, which is a private nonprofit trust fund owned and operated by the state of Utah for its public employees and their dependents. We will transform it to a similar trust fund in the private sector, but owned and operated for all the people of Utah, not just the public employees and their beneficiaries and dependents, so that people in Utah would have access to uniform financing for all of us, for all medically necessary care. That's the basic essence of it. Again, public money, which is how we always, in the United States, we always pay for healthcare with public money or public tax policy with private healthcare delivery.
Why go through the legislature instead of putting it on the ballot?
Well, we went to the legislature after we tried to put it on the ballot, and the forces against us, which are huge. The medical industrial complex is the largest aggregate of corporations in our economy. They account for $5 to almost $6 trillion of revenue per year. It's a huge opponent. They managed to persuade the lieutenant governor, for arbitrary and capricious reasons, not to allow us to gather signatures to try to get it on the ballot this year. So we have a state senator who is helping us draft the legislation, and he simply put it into the hopper for the current state legislative session. That's so that we could draw some attention to it, so we could get some earned media like this and get people interested in understanding. One of the things that Luke said was that he can hear that there are two sides to this debate among politicians, the one saying we should leave it the way it is, essentially, and the other side coming up with government, takeover is the way he put it, and he didn't like either side. Well, I need to tell Luke it's not like that. I need to help him see that the alternative offering, which is Utah Cares, or I hope a similar thing can be proposed in Nevada, we'll call it Nevada Cares, it actually isn't a government takeover of healthcare. It's government funding, public funding, which is already true, for privately delivered healthcare in the hands of patients who can seek any physician they want.
As we've also talked about throughout this show, healthcare has kind of been used as this political pawn for the ACA tax credits. People were kind of at the whim of the government. How can you tell people to trust the government to carry out this public funding option for healthcare?
I'm not trying to tell people to trust the government. I'm trying to tell people that we are already being taxed more heavily, by the way, than any other populace anywhere else in the world for healthcare. I'm not saying that our tax rates are higher than anywhere else. They aren't. But what we pay for healthcare via public revenues, via taxes, that's more than any other nation derives from its taxpayers.
How so?
We already pay for healthcare through public money. How so? Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, the Child Health Insurance Plan, the tax benefits that allow employers to write off the benefits that they give to their employees, the fact that it's non-taxable income, the health benefit is when it's given to an employee, the VA, the Indian Health Service, and an acronym soup of other health programs that are both state and federal level and sometimes even local level health plans. All of those together are all public employees and their dependents. They have benefits that are taxpayer associated. associated. You add all those up and you have an amount per capita that is more in the United States than is more than the per capita amount of all health costs in any other country. We're already paying for it. We just need to stop giving it away to institutions, private for-profit health insurers, who rob us of 25% off the top for their quote-unquote administrative costs, which are actually their payments to their owners. The shareholders who own the insurance companies are making bank on our illnesses and our injuries. We've got to stop allowing all that money to be drained off when we need it to care for people who have ovarian cancer.
And really quickly, one final question. In your book, you advocate for healthcare as a constitutional right. What does that mean for you?
Well, I don't actually say overtly, well, let's put healthcare as a constitutional right, although there are lots of people who say that. I say it doesn't have to be. It's not written in the Constitution now, but neither is asphalt, the right to asphalt, written in the Constitution. And we all have public streets that we can drive on. I can drive on my streets from my house in Salt Lake to the White House without paying any fees or any tolls. Why? Because we know it's infrastructure. Healthcare is infrastructure that we need for a healthy population. Well said by Luke, by the way. People need to have healthcare in order to be productive workers. We need everybody to be productive. That's why we need healthcare.
There is so much to talk about, but that is all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Lucia. I appreciate it very much.
I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you've been listening to Purple Politics Nevada. This episode was published with the assistance of the Journalism and Women Symposium Health Journalism Fellowship, supported by the Commonwealth Fund. Make sure to tune in over the next couple months. We'll be featuring candidates competing for statewide office ahead of the June primary.